It is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game with The Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, and this hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. We're about to rank SEC coaches in the oddest but best way. We're putting them in bachelorette categories.
This is so good. The thought process going into some of these, I mean, I was cackling laughing headed into this.
I think I'm more interested in like the math behind it.
Yes.
Before
that's what's
we
so
get
good.
To, yeah.
Because you got to find the reasoning of like why you even think that way.
Right,
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Before we get to that, I wanted to ask, did you guys see that AJC is no longer doing a print edition?
I did see that.
It's so upsetting, but at the same time, I don't know the last time I've purchased an AJC like print edition.
Well, you can't frame stuff anymore. Like, you know, big moments like
yeah.
You know, Braves win the World Series or
People buy them like when the day their child is born,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Don't pre-buy it because then you could get their, you know, you might have the wrong day.
Yes.
That happened on The Office. That's why I said that.
It did.
Oh, so good.
It's so upsetting, though. But I guess that just shows the times. It is 2025.
I mean, yeah.
Well,
it's cost.
How much money are they spending?
Eventually, we won't be able to buy, you know, music anymore in a hard copy. I know that the vinyl thing's kind of come back around, but it's kind of the same thing.
When's the last time you bought a hard copy?
Music? Of what?
Of anything.
Of vinyl, pretty recently.
But are you listening to that?
Yeah, we have a vinyl player in our kitchen.
Yeah. Well, okay.
It's kind of cool right now to do the vinyl thing. Taylor is selling cassettes when her album comes out.
Who?
Taylor Swift.
Oh, okay.
T Swizzle.
I'm not on first name basis.
No, she's on first name basis at this point. Anyway, let's get to the SEC and how you guys would rank these coaches if they were going on The Bachelorette. So you guys know how this works. Basically, when The Bachelorette debuts, there's always a different kind of category that they cast these guys for. So if you were looking at all the SEC coaches, who would you call the guy with a gimmick? Basically, he shows up in a costume on a horse and has a giant food item, but he normally like goes home on night one or two.
I'm so curious to see who you got for this.
Eli Drinkwitz.
Okay, yeah.
Because he shows up to SEC Media Days, and he wants to talk about conspiracy theories and everything. He also wants to be, trash talking players who could squash him, and he just screams gimmick to me. I'm indifferent on Eli Drinkwitz these days, but he just screams gimmick to me.
Yeah, I'll get to him later. I had two for this. I had Hugh Freeze being kind of gimmicky. He's got this new age offense, but they haven't had a winning season.
I have like four for Hugh Freeze.
He also remember he did the game when he was at Liberty from the hospital bed.
Yep.
Okay, dude. And then also your boy Brian Kelly, who we were just talking about the gimmick yesterday of him talking about his family and all that.
Family,
like, dude. You literally introduced. You been talking about a gimmick during your introduction where he's trying to get that Southern. I'm like, dude, you don't belong. Let's be honest.
I think Clark Lee could be a gimmick guy too because he's like, yeah, we're gonna win a national title here, and I'm like, you don't believe that.
No, you don't.
All right, let's move on to the hunk. He's a total dreamboat. Shows up. You probably assume that he's never had an awkward phase in his life, but maybe doesn't have it all upstairs. Like, you just hear like, da-da-da.
So I probably went a different route with this one than Bo did. I actually was like, okay, the guy that looks good,
yeah,
but, you know, kind of empty other than that.
And but he's pretty.
Exactly. So I went with two different, I went with Venables. And one of the reasons I went with him was because, like, you look at every reason they hired him, and it's perfect. Like, every reason they hired him at Oklahoma is absolutely perfect. Comes from a championship pedigree program in Clemson, you know, coached under Dabo for years. He's a defensive guy. He talks with grit. He's an Oklahoma guy. And it's like, it all should be perfect. But it hasn't been. And it's been ugly. And it's been anything but perfect. So I actually went with him being the hunk. Like, you just look at it from the outside, and you're like, oh, this is awesome. And then you start digging into the empty trophy case, and you're like, oh, God, that's not good.
Yeah, there's a few that were really hard. I mean, this one was hard for me because I'm like, you know, they're coaches. Like, unless we watched them play, right? And Venables is a guy I watched play back in the day. You just don't remember. But there's a couple. I think Napier could fall a little bit into that because he's, you know, kind of that all-American kind of thing. But I put Sark because I don't think.
That's a good one. I had him too.
Because I look at Sark sometimes and I'm like, is anything going on up there?
Yeah. You know what I always think of when I you bring it up, and his, you know, I don't know, his whole personal life obviously has been on display for years and years and years, and it just is what it is, and it's unfortunate to an extent. But I also see the remade version of Shark. We saw him here in Atlanta. But then you have – remember when he's coming out of the tunnel and the guy was, like, kind of holding him back? Have you ever seen this clip? There's a clip where the TV guy is, like, holding him back going, hey, don't run out of the tunnel yet. We're going to wait till the TV camera's ready.
Right.
And, like, he kind of catches himself and then he just lets it go. And he basically tells the guy to get his effing hands off of him and don't ever touch him again. It's like a – get your hands off me.
And the TV guy was like,
oh, God, there he is.
Yeah. I mean, and I've been around Sark. He's obviously a smart guy. He's very – one of the best play callers in college football. And but it just – sometimes you look at him and you're like, what you thinking there?
Yeah.
You thinking anything? Are you watching a hamster on a wheel right now? Or is that –
How about the drunk? This guy is just here for a good time. Probably doesn't
I'll be
even...
so disappointed if we're not the same
it's
one.
Sam Pittman
yes,
for me,
it
man.
Is.
Sam Pittman's like, hey, you got the case? You got case of Natty? Yeah, bring that on over here. Like, he just sit. I could see Sam Pittman sitting in his office with a mini fridge. Like, he's got his feet propped up on the mini fridge, and he just leans in and grabs the next cold beer out. And, boy, that boy can hit him. He can hit, can he? Well, he's quick.
I love that. It's like that one to me was probably the easiest choice. You could have gone a couple different directions, but Sam Pittman as the drunk, he's just that guy that's like, I'm here to party. I'm just going to ride this boat at Arkansas as long as it'll have me, and when they kick me off, I'm just going to go have a few beers. You know what I mean? Like, he just strikes me as that guy that's here for
what
a good time.
What are you going to do if you get fired, Sam? I'm going to go buy the Quick Trip.
You can just see him
cold
on the
case beer.
On the Bachelorette. I didn't give you a rose, Sam. Oh, that's okay, sweetie. I'll be all right. I'm just going to go out here and pour brown water and see what happens. We'll have a good time.
All right, how about the villain? He's probably good-looking, but really just there to cause chaos. Confessionals are all slamming the other contestants, maybe talking trash about his players.
Well, I don't think the good-looking part goes to this guy. I'm not trying to judge, but but I think Brian Kelly is the number that he has got villain written all over him. He's kind of gimmicky at times. He's very mean. He cusses out his players. So they all cuss at their players, but
we're sitting here again.
Yeah. He's just very unlikable. Very unlikable. I think he's a hell of a coach, but he's easily one of the most unlikable coaches in college football.
So I struggled with this one this morning, and I asked Allie, I was like, give me an example of what a villain would be on The Bachelorette. Mm-hmm. And your reasoning was what? Do you remember?
He talks trash, like Two-Face.
Right.
Yeah. I also had Hugh Freeze on here.
Yeah, in their confessional going, yeah, I mean, that guy's an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, this, that, and the other. And when she said that, immediately I was like, that's Eli Drinkwitz. Like, Eli Drinkwitz is a guy who he's put together a 10-win season and has been great, but he's also like trash talk other players during the game. He's made a fool of himself multiple times, talking trash to other coaches and doing other different things. He just seems like the kind of guy that's going to meet you at midfield, take the visor off and be like, hey coach, great game. And then afterwards be like, that team sucked. I don't even want to hear it. We took him to the woodshed. It was over before halftime. Like, he's just that kind of trash talker. But I actually respect him as a coach. But he just, to me, he fits perfectly into that category. Yeah. He's just that guy.
I almost had four for Hugh Freeze. Like, drunk, villain.
He fits into a lot of them.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
sure.
There's a few of them.
We have two more. We need to get to the here for the wrong reasons guy. Pretty much a social climber, influencer, someone there just for the fame. Probably already has a good following on the socials.
I had two, so you can go ahead.
I had two as well. I had Lane Kiffin.
I had Lane Kiffin.
You got to include him
Lane
in there.
Lane Kiffin's definitely on there.
You got to include, especially when you talk about social media thing. Like, he's that kind of guy. I don't like the marriage between him and Ole Miss. It's been great, I think, for both sides. But I don't think that anybody ever looks at Lane Kiffin and goes, oh, man, he's going to retire at Ole Miss. You know what I mean? It's like every year he's just floating his name or Jimmy or whoever's representing is floating his name out there so he gets another raise from Ole Miss. And he also fits the influencer category because I know he's got young daughters that do the whole, TikTok spiel and Instagram and everything else. So I had Lane Kiffin in that one. I'll see who you get with your first one before I say my second.
I had Kiffin. I had Shane Beamer.
Yep, I had the same, because
because Beamer is like, here's a problem where you know too much, and I don't want to say too much, but I know that Shane Beamer lived in this town for a while, and, you know, He's a regular dude. His dad might be a famous coach.
Yeah.
And he might be a hell of a coach himself now and recruiter. But Shane Beamer, well, you know, he I'm sure that he's showed up at some places. He's probably like, yeah, I probably shouldn't went there.
Yeah, he's. It's funny we had both those because they both fit that category pretty perfectly.
All right, this one is the total catch, the final one. The one that's going to win it all, has a great career, good looks, great personality. Who is that?
I had two for this one as well.
I think we all can agree that Kirby Smart is the total package as a head coach.
I had Kirby as one of them.
Yeah.
I think Kirby is – Kirby played, he's coached, he has an edge. He also is very truthful and honest about what's going on in the game, very much to the point where he's very much turned into Saban-esque, where he's truthful about something that's happening. Fan base that hates him is like, you're just crying because now we're even the playing field. And it was always, I always people tell me, I'm like, Saban ain't crying. He's telling you how he's going to kick your ass, but the next way he's going to do it. And he's telling you, if you don't want it to happen this way, you can stop it. Kirby's very much like that. I also had Kalen DeBoer.
I tried to talk myself into it, and I couldn't. I was like, dude, that just sounds way too skewed.
Because we're sitting there. Kalen DeBoer sits down with us at SEC Media Days. He has the total package look. He talks like a coach. Mm-hmm. He dresses like a coach. He's like Sandra goes, oh, I didn't know he would be that good looking.
Yes, she did.
And I was like, okay. So then I put that so that I could hear Sandra saying that, and he literally like when he sat down, I'm doing the old. He's getting his headset on so he can hear me. And I'm like, Coach, you know, Michael Pence, blah, blah, blah. And he rolls right into it, doesn't stop. He's very much like Kirby in that. The only thing he hasn't done is win a national title.
Yeah.
And I don't think he would go where Kirby will.
Right.
Like, you know, with some places.
Sure.
Just because I think he's more of that they just do it. They handle their business differently. But
they
he's
do.
A total coach, which to me is a total catch.
It's kind of when we were talking about Ryan Grubb for a little bit earlier that I've heard that Ryan Grubb, he's more the animated, which is exactly what Kirby is. And that's why I think Kirby is the ultimate head coach. Like, he's going to be calm in these pressers. He's going to be calm in these meetings. He's going to talk to his players. His players are going to respect him because he's honest with the players, and he's going to demand the utmost out of their talent and everything else. And he wins. And if I had to pick a guy right now to go play for, it would be Kirby Smart. Obviously.
Absolutely.
But I'm with you in all directions right there. It's just it's the whole deal.
Kalen DeBoer will be if Porkchop was a boy and she was picking a college or right now and it was DeBoer Smart, I'd be like, you can't go wrong.
No, you can't.
You really can't go wrong.
Well, and this is the perfect opportunity to go ahead and say congrats to JoJo Fletcher and Jordan Rogers. They announced that they are with child, and that is a bachelorette baby, also going to be the most gorgeous child ever born.
Yeah, good for him. Good for them.
Coming up, lots of Falcons changes and NFL news that I'm not sure we saw coming. We'll go in the huddle next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the
Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the morning shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, Dylan hanging out as well, and with college football on deck this weekend. Mike, you already said you got to stop at Publix on the way home for supplies. Dude, what is the routine to prepare for a weekend of great football?
I don't know. You got to map out your meals like Bo was doing earlier. He said he's got three meats. Did you say which meats they were?
No, not really.
Something about tacos.
I said pork. It's just going to be, we're going to, the neighbor's got like half a pork butt that he froze. He did use the other half. He put it in a crock pot. So I'm going to cook half of that. So it's like 5 pounds of pork butt.
Okay.
Going to do probably 3 pounds of flank steak. Because I marinate that and everything, and then just sear it basically. And then I'm going to do like a chuck roast or a round roast, and basically just pull the meat, use that for kind of so we're going to do tacos with all of it, and then the rest will be leftover sandwiches and just
good.
Walk by the fridge and say, you know, I want a couple of the slices of flank steak or
well, Mexican sausage is good for everybody.
I'm not cooking Mexican sausage this weekend. I mean, if you really want some, Dylan, you can come over. I'll throw some on there for you.
Not to stand on an island in this room, but I was thinking. So I got a low country boil pot for Father's Day. I was thinking I might break that thing out this weekend and get some shrimp going. Get a little low country.
What kind of pot did you get? Wait, what, do you know the brand?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Well, I ask you only because Uncle Beaver sent me one like a new one I've never seen before. It's called Can Cooker. It's like a steam cooker kind of thing like that.
Oh, wow.
You can get pretty big ones. And they look really, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that's what you had.
No, that's not what I think. Mine's pretty old school. You know, just a big pot with a burner. And so we'll see what happens. I don't know. I haven't used it yet. So I was thinking about breaking that out. And since the weather's, you know, starting to cool off a little bit, I don't mind sitting outside around a boiling flame.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Low Country Boil is legit. We're going up to Ella J. And I know every time we go to like rent a cabin or something, I make this chili with a jalapeno cornbread on top.
Yes.
Oh, I'm ready for that.
Yes.
But
oh God, okay, sounds so good.
Can you guys? I'm glad you brought up chili. I love chili. Huge chili fan. But last week, I saw like three different people say, "Yeah, I got a pot of chili making," and I'm like, "Dude, it is 85 degrees outside."
Yeah.
Like now you're going up. It's actually right now chili would be fine because you're going up the mountains. Everything. So I don't hate. But last weekend, I'm like, why are y'all cooking chili?
Jumping
it is literally 90 degrees. Like,
well, she'll have her pumpkin spice and everything
else
going on.
Again, it's 65 degrees outside right now, and she's going north, so it's going to be perfect. But last weekend, I was like, August ain't chili time, folks. What are y'all doing?
Well, Mom and I make chili year-round.
and
we eat it with tortilla chips, and I love it.
I mean, dude, I do Frito scoops of mine. I almost make mine like a Frito pie type thing. I do so much, but like it's too warm for chili.
It's never
you
too warm
get
for
to
good chili.
You got to get to at least mid October before you can make chili. Am I just like
you're
off
not
my rocker
wrong?
On
you're
that,
not
or?
Wrong. With a crock pot, it's too hot to do during the summer.
But. Yeah, yeah, man. I mean, I'm not hating.
You're not wrong. I'm just
I'm not hating
weird.
On
it's
you.
Okay.
To me, it's just too like, dude. I'm a firm believer in do whatever the hell you want. All right, as long as you don't infringe on me. I just personally think it's too early.
All right, Dylan, let's go in the huddle. All right, we had a few changes yesterday in Flowery Branch. I'm going to run through them, and then we'll hear from Raheem Morris. So the Falcons signed safety Jordan Fuller to the active roster. Braylon Trice went on the injured list. Falcons also announced that they have officially signed Ryan Hayes and Carter Warren to their practice squad. But if you heard Raheem Morris yesterday talking about the blind side, he basically echoed what Mike and Bo have been saying for about a week now.
That's a huge thing. That was more of it. I kind of brought that up. Like that's more of what McGarry does, and that's more of our strength. That's more of what we've been able to do. You know, I don't know if the analytical guys here today that usually handle that stuff for me, but like we run the ball significantly better to the right side. You know, there's no secret there because of guys like McGarry and Lindstrom playing together, doing it for a amount of years, doing it for a certain amount of years, being drafted together, growing up together, all of those things, there's no secret. And that's definitely more of a deal than just the blind side protection. The reason you can downplay some of the blind side protection is because some of the gun stuff and the gun snaps that are in the game now, that wasn't in the game when Joe Montana played, right? There wasn't as much gun. It was way more drop back. There was true three-step. There was true five-step. There was true seven-step. And now a little bit more is done out of gun, a little bit more is done out of pistol, a little bit further away. And when I'm standing like this, I can feel that as opposed to it truly being a blind side.
Yeah, so Ra, with a mouthful there, talked about it first. Yeah, I think it's a really good point about the right side and how they have always ran the ball better on that right side, and that's because McGarry is an elite run blocker. See, that's the thing that Jake Matthews gets kind of poo-pooed is he's good at everything. He's better. You look at his grade, and overall it's a better grade than McGarry as a tackle because – his weaknesses are way less overall, but McGarry is so much better at the run block, and not to mention Chris Lindstrom's presence over there. But then he mentioned the blind side stuff, and again, you listen to people just hark on this blind side, and it's I get the thought because that's what was instilled when they were kind of learning the game, but that's adapting with the game. And if you hear someone saying, "Well, the blind side," well, the blind side don't mean that what it used to because of the Pistons, because of these four, Mike. Correct me if I'm wrong, as a guy that played the line, but I think some of these offenses adapted to take away there being a blind side.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you hopefully they move Michael Penix around a lot more this year. It was funny because I've been on that boat about the blind side thing. I actually saw Tom McClure, one of my old teammates. He was like, "Oh, you know, it sucks that they lost their blind side protector." And I was talking to Todd, and I was like, "It hit me that Todd was actually drafted here in like '98." You know what I mean? So I'm like, that whole Joe Montana thing that Raheem's talking about, he definitely still feels some of that. But it is a thing. It's just not a big thing. And, you know, we've obviously talked about it till we're blue in the face on this show.
Well, we all got the notifications yesterday, the trade. Everyone was shocked by Micah Parsons is going to the Green Bay Packers for two first-round picks and defensive tackle Kenny Clark. Micah will get a four-year, $188 million deal. Let's hear from Jerry Jones on this whole situation.
I wanted an elevation because he was going to be elevated to an elite status relative to financial, the percent of the cap that he got relative to all the players. And I really believe strongly that when you have that, then you have an added responsibility to show leadership for the whole team when you're one of the six or seven that are getting two-thirds of the money.
It's a whole lot to read into that.
It's not the first time that Micah Parsons has been questioned about who he is off the field and in the locker room as far as a leader and everything. I mean, his teammates have done it too. But there's also no doubting how good of a player he is and how much better he makes your defense. Also, you could say the fact that they never won a playoff game with Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to take into it. Would I want a player like Micah Parsons on my team? Well, yeah, because that's something that, and as a Atlanta Falcons fan, I haven't had in years, which is a pass rush. Might not need that now. Hopefully we've fixed that. We know with James Pierce Jr. and what some people expect out of him, like Lewis Riddick. There's a lot to unpack on all of this. I think both sides mishandled this in some ways.
Yeah, I was trying to go back in my mind and think of another situation where there's three guys that are making this much money in terms of your roster. You don't have to go back that far. Can you go with me on the trio here that won the Super Bowl, but then one of them got an extension and they were terrible the next year? All almost the same positions as we're talking about with the Dallas Cowboys right now.
How long ago was this?
It was 5 years, maybe something like that.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. The Rams were awful the next year.
The Rams.
And remember, though, the Rams is that they mortgaged their future with draft picks also to get there.
They did.
And they had Aaron Donald, and they had Stafford.
Yep, that's one of
the
two.
And the receiver would have been Cooper Kupp.
Yep, and he had just got the extension. Yeah. And when that happened, all three, you know, all of a sudden they're not healthy or whatever else is going on. And I think they won 5 games the following year.
Yeah, and Aaron Donald then retires.
Exactly. That was like that to me is the biggest. If you wanted to put something in Jerry Jones's favor and say he doesn't look as bad as you think, that would be one of the things that I would point to. But there's going to be a lot of people question Jerry today. I just don't think I'm one of them. I think I'm fine with it.
Here's the deal. Was it the right move trading? I can't say it wasn't. Did they go about it the right way? Absolutely not.
That's a fair point.
And you can,
very fair point.
You can look at this, that's to me looking at it the right way. At the end of the day, was it probably the best move to get one of these guys off and it just happened to Micah? Yeah, it's probably the right move. Did you go about it the right way? Hell no, you didn't. But I will tell you that you can go about it the right way. In the Huddle is brought to you by 50 Floor. Visit 50floor.com for your free in-home estimate. And I know some people that tell me about them all the time, and I believe everything they say.
Well, coming up, SEC superlatives are on the way. We're going to talk about what game could blow up the SEC with one upset, and it's Fair or Foul Friday. Think about everything we were just talking about. Elijah Wilkinson will start week 1 in place of Caleb McGarry. Fair or foul? Think about it. It seems simple, but it's not. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the
Odyssey app.
It's the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, before a 3-day weekend. This segment is presented by John Foy and Associates, experienced personal injury attorneys. Get the strong arm. So we've covered a couple SEC superlatives, newcomer of the SEC. We've covered coaches in their bachelorette categories. Mm. And one I gave you before and wanted you to think about was which team would blow up the SEC with one upset? Have you been thinking about this, guys?
I hope we don't have the same one on this one. Really, really curious.
You go first.
Okay. I went with Florida.
No, we don't have the same one.
Okay, good. All right. I went with Florida, and I went with that. They have a game.
But they were my backup.
They have a game against Texas in Gainesville on October 4th, I believe. Yeah. And let me just tell you right now, they obviously are a ranked team. And I think Florida, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a Florida guy. Florida to me is the prototypical boom or bust when you look at the SEC this year. Like Florida's either going to hit and everybody's going to stay healthy and their offensive line's going to be good and they're going to have a lot of playmakers and they're going to do some good things. You could also see, you know, Lagway get hampered at some point with a hamstring or something, and then all of a sudden they don't develop as much at certain positions, and you know, something happens like just like last year where it starts going downhill, and then all of a sudden you could see them like winning six games. Mm-hmm. Like it's just they have the ultimate boomer bust roster in terms of what's out there. It's obviously a very tough place to play. All right, and that game on October 4th is relatively early in the season when you look at the SEC slate. So you could see a team like Texas, an Arch Manning, and a first-year starter at quarterback going to Gainesville and having a tough time. We've seen DJ Lagway in certain instances play against great teams and play well. You know, Georgia was one of those teams last year. So he could step up to the plate. If Florida were to beat Texas in Gainesville on October 4th, you want to talk about flipping the tables on what could happen in the SEC this year. All of a sudden, Florida probably vaults into the top 10 at that point.
Well,
and Texas takes a tumble
maybe
based on that.
Florida's got to see that. And that's the thing about Florida with the schedule is they got to play at LSU on September 13th,
yeah,
which is another favorite in the SEC. They also have to play Georgia, as you mentioned, I think. And they have to play Ole Miss, another team that's kind of at Ole Miss in the Grove.
Yeah, but the Georgia and Ole Misses aren't until after.
No, I understand. Okay. But what my point is that, to me, the way I looked at this is that they've got multiple teams on the schedule that could be in contention for the SEC title game.
Yeah.
And they could be the team that knocks them out.
Sure.
And I mean, and they could even Tennessee. They could even not Tennessee could be another one. No, I went with Oklahoma. Because you look at Oklahoma's schedule, and the reason I went with Oklahoma is they have Texas on October 11th, and it's the same situation. That's a neutral field, it's the Cotton Bowl. Right?
Yep.
But that one, that's a game where they can do that. They also have Alabama at Alabama late in mid-November, November 15th. And that's a game where Alabama wants revenge on them. But, you know, what's played out with the quarterback situation at Alabama? Is Ty Simpson still the starter? Or has Alabama once Jam Miller got healthy, used him and kind of an old school pedigree that they were going backwards and gotten themselves there by playing defense, running the football, and now here comes Oklahoma. We're like, well, we're going to stop your run game. Can you beat us? And then they knock Alabama out of contention. You know,
100%.
Like there's so many little things. South Carolina is a team that could pop up and literally do it to Oklahoma because they play them the week after they go to Columbia, South Carolina the week after they play Texas. Could that be a letdown game? So South Carolina could actually be the same team, right? That's the beauty of the SEC to me, and that's where they are above other conferences. That's why they tell you that non-conference. That's why the whole thing was a big deal about non-conference games, because there's no other conference that you can really say what we're saying these things about.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would have bet money that you were going to go with Auburn, to be honest. And outside of a couple of games, they've got probably four ranked opponents within the SEC. But the Georgia and Alabama games are in Auburn, and that is a place that both of those teams know very well can be very tough. No matter how good you are, can be very tough to play at. In terms of those rivalries. So Auburn's is one of those teams. I'm having a hard time buying in. I don't know what Jackson Arnold is. I know that he ran it right down Bama's throat last year when he was at Oklahoma, but I don't know how well he fits in with what Hugh Freeze is trying to do, but they seem to believe in him to the point that they said they're probably going to play three quarterbacks tonight against Baylor. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, if Jackson Arnold's going to be successful, they're going to have to go back to a Gus Malzahn-type offense, I think.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. So we'll see what happens, but interesting stuff nonetheless.
Let's go from upset and would blow up the SEC to what is the game of the year?
I think we just named 10 of them. I think Texas at Georgia right now is the one that stands out the most right off the top.
Yep.
Just because of the team that has taken in the last 5-6 years has taken the mantle from Alabama as the head honcho of the SEC, the creme de la creme, right? Whatever you want to say, has been Georgia. And you've got the newcomer who played in the SEC championship game, lost to Georgia twice last year, once at home, and then they went to here in Atlanta. They're coming in with the babe, the boy, you know, the savior of college football, as he's been by many, you know, Arch Manning. And is he the thing that gets Texas over the Georgia hump, right?
Yeah.
The buildup will be
insane.
Yeah, and that's The only issue is how late that game is in the season for me.
Yeah. I think that when you look ahead, that's definitely – I have that too. I had that written down. I'll give you a bonus pick, though, that I think is going to mean more. It always means a ton, but it's probably going to mean even more this year based on the preseason scenarios. I'm really curious to see Oklahoma against Texas this year. I'm really curious to see the Red Rivalry – Red River rivalry, I'm sorry, and see how that plays out. Because I do think Oklahoma is a much better team. I just mentioned that we were talking about John Mateer earlier in the newcomer of the year conversation. With everything, and you mentioned it, all the pressure that you feel like is on Texas. You had them at a 10 yesterday with yours. I did not agree, but let's go back to that conversation. That is a game that right there, decently early in the season, could really be a barn burner. And it usually is, hasn't been the last couple of years, but that is a game that no matter who, just like we're talking about Auburn and Georgia or Auburn and Alabama, that's a rivalry game that can flip everything on its head.
I've got two more, and it's a little bit of a homerish take, but Florida at LSU, if LSU beats Clemson and Florida goes in there, obviously getting past Southern Florida, it goes into death. What now would be the real Death Valley, because LSU would win the Death Valley rights. That would be one, but think about this one. Texas on October 4th rolling into the swamp. Imagine if Florida makes it past LSU and Miami, and Texas is unscathed, and they come to the swamp and they play. You talk about welcome to the SEC. That's one of the toughest places to play in the country, and that is an SEC, and that is, you know, that could be in an SEC environment that maybe Texas hasn't quite seen yet.
That's exactly why I included them with my team that could blow up the SEC with one upset, because, like I said, Arch Manning going on October 4th and playing in that environment down in the swamp, that's not going to be an easy task, to say the least. And as a reminder, today's Mic'd Up Fair Foul Friday is brought to you by Buffalo's Cafe. Come wing it family style at one of Buffalo's Cafe's 13 Atlanta locations. We've talked about all the food that I'm going to cook this weekend. You know what? Might just do a old Buffalo's Cafe trip and get that thing delivered right there to the front door. Make it work.
It's like your meal before the meal.
Yeah.
You gotta satisfy the hunger while you're cooking.
So good.
All right, fair or foul, the Cowboys got an adequate return for Micah Parsons.
I'm going to say foul. I don't necessarily blame them for the trade. If you didn't want to pay him $47, $48 million, whatever it is. But I will say that it seemed like this was over before it started. They probably could have leveraged it a little bit longer and maybe got like an added second somewhere in there. But I don't blame them for doing it. I'm not sure they got adequate compensation.
I love Kenny Clark.
Yep.
Love Kenny Clark. But I think it's foul as well. I would have said I don't need a player entering his 10th year, about to be 30 years old. I would have said, give me 3 first-round draft picks and let's just walk away. Because you know why? The problem with those first-round draft picks are, go back and look at where Green Bay's been picking the last 5-6 years. 21st, 23rd, 28th, 26th, 25th. I'm throwing out some of those numbers. I don't know they're all accurate, but I can guarantee you they're all in the 20s. So there's nothing that – and you give them the best player in the league defensively with Jordan Love maybe coming in, and Matt LaFleur's offensive mind as the head coach. It's going to be another 20, so I would have wanted 3 first-round picks at least.
Fair or foul, Bo, you start this one. Elijah Wilkinson will start week 1 in place of Caleb McGarry against the Buccaneers.
It's fair, unless there's an injury, it's fair. He knows the offense. They're comfortable with him that he can play that position. He's started, 20 games at right tackle in his career, albeit a few years ago in Denver. I think it's very fair. It would be a shocker if any of the guys we saw – were able to that Mike and I watched and that they signed were able to knock him out of that spot. And the only one on the roster right now is Michael Jarrell. The others are on the practice, so it's way fair.
I'm going to go even further. Are you ready for this proclamation?
Go ahead.
I feel better about him going into this week 1, knowing what I know, than I did with Caleb McGarry going against T.J. Watt last year.
Now you're just being. Now you're just clickbaiting. Dylan's going to write that
better,
up. Dylan's going to write that up.
I feel better with him playing, knowing what I know in hindsight. This year, I feel better about week 1
also,
than I did with Caleb McGarry against T.J. Watt. Knowing
you expect that on the website later.
Yeah. Knowing that Zach Robinson didn't obviously prepare the game plan to adequately block T.J. Watt. I think he's got better feet than Caleb McGarry.
Also, now we're going to get a tweet from a certain person. T.J. should have got a right tackle, real right tackle.
Yeah. There you go.
Don't even tweet me, Mr. Yo. Just
Elijah Wilkinson for four games will be fine. I am just fine with it. And you heard Raheem say it yesterday in the presser. He was like, we feel good about the roster.
All right, fair or foul. Ohio State will end Texas's reign as the number one team in the nation in the very first week.
I'm going fair. I think they beat Texas in week one. I think the home field advantage plays into that. I feel like Texas is going to feel like it's a sleepy game. Noontime. That's because of the noon.
I'm going to say foul. Texas is a team that's used to playing noon games, especially big ones. They play Oklahoma seemingly every year at noon. It's foul. I think Arch Manning is going to have just enough more offense to top Ohio State. Ohio State's extremely fast in their linebackers, and they have Caleb Downs, who's probably a top five defensive player in college football. However, they have questions to me. Guys, first start being against Texas, I have questions. I have questions for Ohio State and Julian Sain.
Yeah, it's not a bad point.
Fair or foul? Is it fair or foul to tailgate with a TV and never actually walk inside the stadium?
No, it's not foul. I think it should be. However, some of these setups with the TVs and the food, I mean, if it's Georgia versus Eastern Kentucky, I mean, come on, let's be real. What's the point of going in? Just stay out there and party.
I was concerned because you threw me for a curve when you go, no, it's not foul. And I was like, oh, wait, which one is it? Is it fair or foul?
It's not foul, but depending on the game, it could be.
I'm in complete agreement with you. I one time I was tailgating outside of Bryant Denny in Tuscaloosa for an LSU game. I was just tailgating. I was like, I'm not going to go in. Tickets are crazy. And my wife just simply said to me, I wish we were going in. And within 60 seconds, I was on StubHub and bought tickets for an astronomical amount and went inside. So he's right. Under the right circumstances, it's fine.
Okay. Well, coming up, thank you both for participating in Fair or Foul. Coming
You're welcome.
Up, we've got the wake up call 404-726-0929. I do have another SEC superlative we want to get to. Which team is most likely to storm the field first? We want you to weigh in on this as well within the wake up call 404-726-0929. In which game is appointment television for you this weekend? 404-726-0929 or at Twitter, on Twitter, at 929 Morning Shift. This hour has been brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. The wake-up call is next on Sports Radio 929 The Game and the
Odyssey app.